For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
So we're this week is Haftorah for Shelach, and it's about the Parsha is about the sending of spies. Some people prefer the word scouts.
Scouts,
they were
scouts to spy out.
That's right, right. It's a but the spy has kind of like a funny expression. Like you think of a spy, meaning that they're pretending to be someone who they're not, and they go incognito. Whereas the spies in the Parsha, they were just to scout out the land and get a view. But the Haftorah is going to deal with the spies too. That just like Moshe Rabbeinu sent out spies, Yehoshua is going to send out spies before he goes into Jericho or into Jericho. And the question is, the spies was one of the worst things we've ever done. We didn't go into the land because of the spies. We blew it. So the question is, why would Yehoshua repeat the same mistake? If the last time we brought the spies, the last time we had it, it didn't work out very well, so why is that the first thing he does on the way into the land of Israel is to send spies of his own? That's right.
For teshuva, he thought that was the way of doing teshuva.
Okay, yeah, that's some people say like that. Very good. Psychologically, if we knew that we couldn't come into the land because of what happened with the spies, he was afraid that that would like hang over us, that we couldn't get it right, and so he wanted to break that boundary and show that it could be done. And since we were coming in, and people are always, I guess people were afraid that if you try to do something, you know, maybe you'll mess up, maybe we need to be afraid, maybe it can't be done. And people had in the back of their mind, well, last time we made a mistake, it took us 38 years to recover. You know, that's a long time. You know, the whole generation had to die out in the desert. And so people, they, in order not to live with fear, I know, I think that they have ways where they train children that are afraid of the dark, where they like slowly bring them down in the dark and they lower the lights, or they someone's holding their hand and see, there's nothing to be afraid. There are all kinds of methods, but in some ways that's what he was trying to do. Was he was trying to show them that we don't have to be afraid that if we make plans or we do something that it won't work out. That some people learn it that way. And also he took precautions this time to do it in a correct way. Perhaps the group they sent before was too large. Perhaps the group had the wrong mission. Sometimes we don't do things because of past history, and we're blocked in. And there are reasons why it didn't work before, but that's no reason why you can't do it now. It's like you go on a family trip or something goes wrong, and, well, we're never doing that again, right? But you have to sometimes be able to say, well, that there were reasons that didn't work. It was to this, it was to that. It doesn't mean we can't try something different. And that's what he's going to do over here, and he's going to do it successfully, and there was no problem. But that's kind of the way to deal with things. Instead of just, well, it's never going to happen. No, you can do it. That maybe the group was too large, maybe it wasn't well focused, maybe they weren't the right people, but it could be done. There's another thought here as well, like, and that is, we believe that Hashem directs us to do things for a reason. And often we don't know what that reason is, but we believe that that everything has a reason. Mm-hmm. There was a famous rabbi. His name was Rabbi Pragamansky. He was he lived right. He lived through the Holocaust, and he once was traveling with someone on a Friday in pre-war Lithuania, and they missed their stop. And in those days, like, you missed your stop, that was it. And they got stuck on in the middle of nowhere, literally in the middle of nowhere on, you know, 2 hours before Shabbos. And the other rabbi that was with him said, you see, Rabbi so-and-so, what do you mean everything's for a purpose? We're, like, stuck here in the middle of nowhere. It's not even a Jewish community. We're going to be stuck along in a railroad station on Shabbos. And he says, no, a Jew is never lost. Everything's for a purpose. You have to have faith. And so they asked one of the people there, are there any Jews in the town? They said, yeah, there's one. So they walk, they get directions, and they go to this one Jewish household in this town, and they knock on the door, and the person was like shocked. This was an hour before Shabbos. He said, "You are Elijah the prophet." He said, "You know, like," and he said, "My wife gave birth a week ago, and we had a baby boy, and we need to have a bris. By any chance, are one of you a moyle?" And sure enough, one of them was a moyle, he said, "I tried to get someone to come here for Shabbos, and no one would come. Hashem sent you, you know." And that's the, but there's an idea that things happen, and we never really know why they happen, but they're for a purpose. And one of the great purposes of this spying, to some extent, they got caught right away. In other words, it's debatable whether this spying was successful as a spy job, because they get caught right away and they have to run away. But they were successful, and they brought a great person named Rachav, becomes a famous convert. Not many people know about it. Everybody knows about Rus, and everybody knows about some of the other famous converts. But she was one of the all-time famous converts. According to many, she married Yehoshua. And many of the prophets that came out of the Jewish people later were descended from her. And so it could be the reason that they had this mission and was to meet this lady and to be the spark to bring her to Judaism. And sometimes that happens. We go somewhere, we meet someone, we say a few words, and we find out many years later that influenced that person, that meant something to that person, that made a difference in their life. And that's certainly about what's going to happen here. So let's begin. Vayishlach Yeshua ben Nun, Menashitim Shnai Menashim. He sends out two people. And the purpose of them is, and this is the word for that they usually translate as spies, Meraglim. Anybody want to guess what the Hebrew word for this is, where it comes from, Meraglim?
Rego?
Yes. Oh, you're great. You're answering all my questions today. Okay. That's good. No, otherwise...
I'm making up for my refrigerator. It can't be of it. And there's a message somewhere.
I know. So they were, they're absolutely right. And that's why I didn't like the word spies. The word in Hebrew for spies is Meraglim. It means people that go by foot. It means that people that like walk around, or people that do a foot, you know, do a foot, like a survey, like a scout. So somebody who's Mirago is somebody who goes around, you know, who spies, who walks around, or who investigates himself. Let me have a look, kind of thing. That's the Mirago. So now it adds a word though over here, and the word it adds is cherish. In English. So in English he says that means secretly. Now let's try this. Let's get a little harder. Does anybody know what cherish means?
Quiet.
Quiet, yeah. Where does it come from?
I don't know. Plow?
No, it's cherish, right? Well, in the Mishnah, you always find like cherishot of a cotton. Cherish is a deaf mute, that's right. Some people say, you know, they were Jewish and they would have had a different kind of accent, especially if they had Egyptian Hebrew accent or whatever. So they in order to be spies, they had to pretend they were cherish. They were, you know, mute. They were quiet. In other words, you got to play dumb. Otherwise, how are you going to, you know, you open your mouth, you give yourself away. So some people say that's why he translates this as Marago cherish, like secret spies, means that they were quiet about it. Other people relate it to a word as a cherish is sometimes a craftsman, like a potter, a person that makes different things. And so he says that was their, that's what they pretended to be. So they said, Le Marluchu, go out of U.S. Oretz, go and check out the land, Ves Yericho and Jericho, and Vayelchu, and they went. Vayavu Beis Isha Zona. And they came to a woman who was a zona, which they translate as an innkeeper. The word zona could be related to the word mazon, mazonos, which is food. And that's what an innkeeper is. You want to get food, you go to the mazonos. And that's one way to understand what Rachel was. She was just the Waffle House on the, you know, and the big place that everybody went to get some food. And that's a good place to get information. If you're trying to scout out the land, you go to the water hole. You go to where everybody hangs out, and that's where you would find out the news. The other use of the word zona is the word of a prostitute, which is also a type of innkeeper kind of thing. Again, it's interesting in Hebrew, you could go either way. Like, we don't really know the... There is a... now, if she was a prostitute, why would they have gone there? Usually we try to stay away from those kind of places. Some people say that this was a place where you people could stay in secret. In other words, it was set up in a hidden way because people that went to these places didn't usually advertise who went and who didn't go, and so they were looking for a place where they could go where they wouldn't be noticed, where nobody would ask them questions, and they could go, and so that was they assumed that would have been a good place. The lady's name, Ushmo Rachav. Her name was Rachav. It's interesting also, whenever you read about it, like a lady in the Tanakh, you know, like she ran the place. You know, it was her establishment. I don't know whether, you know, it doesn't say whether she did it or she ran it or she, V'yishkavu shama, and they stayed there. Okay, verse 2. V'yomar l'melech Yericho lemor. Now, somehow this didn't work. They were caught right away. We don't know who it was, but for spies, they didn't. The other spies got away with it. You know, they went through the land. Nobody noticed them. This, they come right away first thing, and they get caught. The king of Jericho says, "Hinei anashim bo hena." There are two men that came here at night. Mibnei Yisrael. They must be Jewish. Lach v'asar. They're spying the land. And the Jewish, I mean, here the Jewish people were standing a short distance away, and they were getting ready to come in the land. Jericho is the first big city in the Middle East from where they were coming. In other words, it was the logical route for them to take, that before you came into Eretz Yisrael, you had to pass Jericho. So they would be on the lookout for Jews, and one of the Jews, the two spies were Pinchas and Kalev. It's hard to imagine that they didn't look rabbinical or scholarly or have a different look about. Pinchas was the very holy zealot, you know, that we had, and Kalev was at least 80 years old. He was not a young person, but they were identified as Jews right away. And verse 3, the Yishlach Melech Yericho. So the king of Jericho sends messengers to Rachav, Lemor. He says, now it's interesting, he doesn't storm the place. You would have thought he would storm the place, and maybe they could be that this was a safe place because there would be a lot of people there who wouldn't want to be discovered, and the king would respect, you know, like, we're going to see. There's a tradition that she knew all the leaders. In other words, she was like the top, you know, lady in that top. All of the important people used to go to use her services or stay in her place. And
Pearl
so,
Mesta.
What?
Pearl Mesta from Washington. She was the hostess with the
mother. Oh, okay. Something like that. That's right. So he said to her, Hotzei anashim haboyim eileh. Take them out. Bring them out. Send them out. Ki lach v'asar haaretz. They're spies. They must be there. Did some men come here? She's very interesting. Right away, her initial thought was, I'm not going to do that. She right away didn't want to give them up, and she says, she hides them, even before talking to them. She takes these two men, and she says, come hide. And then, what is she going to tell the king? Vitomar, and she tells the king, you're 100% right, they did come, but I didn't know where they were from. But he has Shar Liskor, and before dark, B'choshek Anashim Yatsu, they came and they left. How should I know where they went? Lo Yadati Anahalku Anashim. She tells a good story too. You know, she handles herself. You know, first she hides them, and you know, and then she goes out to the in case the king is going to search, and then she goes out to the king's officers and says, "Yeah, they did come, but I don't know where they went. They left before dark." You know what? How she gives them advice? She tells the police service over there, run for my quick run, go that they went that away. Kicha tasigam and you'll reach them. You know this is the, and she's in control over here. Now she realizes that their hiding place was only temporary. Verse 6, via lisim hagana. So she takes them up to the roof. That was a better spot. Vatit mein bepishte ha'etz, and she hides them in flax. Those days they used to dry different crops and put them on the roof, and they stored crops on the roof, so she had some flax on the roof, and she, you know, put it over them and to hid them on the roof. Verse 7. Now this is still in the middle of the night. In other words, the troops are looking for them, and they're in great danger. They can't leave right now, but she hides them up on the roof under the flax. 7. Nashim rodfu achrayim, and the troops are running after them on the yard in Amarvis. Vashar sar, and the gate is closed. Kasher yotzu rodfi machrayim, because they were being chased. Verse 8. Vehema term yishkavum. Now, they're hiding away under the flax. Now she's going to have a talk with them. It's really interesting how this this drama over here. He also aleihem al gag. She wants to have a talk with them up on the roof. Vatomer al anashim. And verse 9. And listen to what she says. Again, this was uncoached. This was just on her own. There are certain people in life that have a way of thinking. They think. You know, they figure things out. You know, and that's really what is a great quality. In other words, there are some people that they just go, they go with the flow, but they never really think. They never really think what it's about. They never really make plans. And here's this lady, and she figured it all out. You know, she's got it. She says, Yadati. She says, I know. Ki nasin Hashem lechem esoretz. I know that your God, Hashem, is going to give you the land. Ki naflei maskam aleinu. And you should know that we're afraid of you. You know, here they were in a strong city. And ki nemogu, and, you should know, all the residents are going to fall in front of you. We have, she said, I know for a fact that nobody's going to be able to withstand. Now, she didn't know how much arms we had or didn't have, but this is the message that she tells them. Verse 10, Kishamanu, why is that? Because we've heard, Esas Shehovis Hashem, Esmei Yamsuf V'Nechem. We have the Midrashim talk about the miracles in the time of Egypt, and they say really like very miraculous types of things. Like there's one view that when the water split in Egypt, that all the waters all over the world split. And then there's ideas when Har Sinai came, that there was like sounds throughout the world, like the whole world was like shaking, you know, from Har Sinai, and that. So again, we don't know if it means it did or actually, or but if you read it over here, she said the people in the land of everybody heard this was the news. Everybody heard Egypt was the country, and now it was in shambles. And there were traders going back and forth, and everybody knew what was going on. And here the slaves had left, and they were in the desert, and they were coming into Eretz Yisrael. And she said, we know what's going on. Now, there were two big, strong kings that were at the gateway to Eretz Yisrael who used to take protection money from the... it's interesting, just like you have like... certain countries have big militaries, and the countries that don't have big militaries pay those countries to protect them or to. So the two great kings were Sihon and Og, and the people in the land of Israel were never worried about foreign invaders because they had these two great kings that were right at the entranceway who had big armies that were there too, and they were actually giants. Sihon and Og, they were from very tall people. There's something about very big people that frightens others. They would so those two kings who they relied on to protect them had been defeated by Moshe. Asher beibra yar leSihon Og asher hui Moshe. And verse 11, Nishma, and when we heard about that, the Yimas Levavenu, our hearts melted away, Velo Kama Oruach Beish. Those people that learned that she was a woman of ill repute or even an innkeeper, she would know because she saw the men, and she was friendly, knew these men, and she saw that they had no spirit in them. Their courage was gone. She would have known. In other words, she had met all of the men and the soldiers and the officers and the politicians, and she said that they're all frightened. They confided in her. So it's interesting. Like you would have thought that they failed in their mission. They got a very good report about what was going on. They understood the morale of the people. And this is really important when you get intelligence. I know before the Six-Day War, everybody thought, well, they have so many planes, so many tanks, so many people. There's no way the Israelis would. There is a version that it was a total. You know, Hashem made a total miracle. It was great. You know, just like the 10 plagues. There's no way we could have won. There's nothing. No way to explain it other than a miracle. That's absolutely true. But it's also true that they were, if you investigated whether they were organized and whether the officer, the army worked together and whether they would make a good fighting, when Iraq lost right after to ISIS, nobody had predicted it, But the people on the inside said, of course it happened, because the army was corrupt and they were all from one particular side. And as soon as the war started, it all fell apart. They basically turned over everything to ISIS. And in other words, you have to be able to investigate the spirit of an army. It's not just about guns and about tanks. It has to do with the morale. Are they a cohesive fighting force? Are they in? Do they see a purpose in it? Are they behind it? And if the army itself is really doesn't have the morale, then no matter how many they are and how good weapons they have, it's not going to be successful. And at times, it just totally falls apart. And often in battles that have fallen apart, they go back and they look at the morale and they look at the cohesiveness, and they could point to that and say, that's why it happened, because the army just, you know, had no, just fell apart. So that's what she tells them, though, about the armies of the people of the land. She said they have no, they're all afraid. And nobody's going to be able to stand. Ki Hashem Elokeichem. Now, obviously, she's a pretty religious lady. She knows all about God. She's talking God. She's not just saying, well, we're afraid, you're going to win, you're strong. She says, we know you're God, but Shamayim Ma'al, he's up there. He's in the heavens. And not only is he in the heavens, he's down here too. Until then, they had ideas that, you know, some people believe there's a God, but God isn't in our life. He's not up, he's up there, but he's not down here. We believe he's both. He's up there, he's down here, he's all around. And So she shows her conviction. Verse 12, Va'ata, and now, again, she's a smart lady. She says, I need a promise. Give me a promise now. And what are they going to say? They're hiding in the flax on the roof. She says, give me a promise, and I want you to promise in Hashem, because I was nice to you. Now it's payback time. I'm hiding you away, and I know that you're going to come back, and eventually you're going to get the land. Now, I did you a favor. Now it's your turn to do me a favor. I want you to do me a favor together with my father's house, and give me a sign. Give me some kind of tangible way that something we can do to survive the upcoming onslaught. Verse 13, and I want you to keep my father, Vesimi and my mother, Vesache and my brothers, Vesachosai and my sisters. She was a family lady. She had a lot of, you know, she wasn't young. She had to have been, I think, at least 40, maybe even older. What?
40 sounds yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. Veskola Sherlehem. Yeah. So now it's interesting. Not only does she want their lives, she says, well, you've got to let them take their bank accounts, everything they have, and save them from death. So she strikes a hard bargain. So verse 14, V'yomer lo anashim nafshinu takteyem lamus. She said, We commit ourselves by our lives that we're men of our word. Im lo sagidu es divrenu zeh, we will convey this deal. Vay b'seis Hashem lanu, when Hashem gives us the land, v'sisimo chesed v'emes, and we'll do with you kindness and truth. It's interesting that they reference truth. Sometimes you do somebody a kindness, but they really don't deserve it. Meaning that you're just being nice, but you don't owe it to them. Over here, this was truth, because she saved their lives. I mean, the king was coming after them, and she told a lie. She could have gotten in big trouble. And so it was kindness to save her and her family, but it was also truth. It was earned. That's how I would say chesed ve'emet, like kindness and truth. So now she's got to get them out. So what she does, v'tori dein b'chevo, and it turns out, it's very interesting how they knew that, I don't know if they knew this ahead of time, but she would have men that would secretly come to her place, and they needed to secretly leave so that they wouldn't be seen. So she has people in that line know how people can do things without being spotted. So she had like a rope system where she would lower them down. And so she lowers them down on the rope from the window. And she had her place was in the wall of the city. And that's where her house was. And she was able to lower them down over the wall and they could escape. The Medrash says an interesting thing, that if you say that she was a woman of ill repute or a prostitute or whatever, even though she was a Gentile, that's not a something to be proud of. It's something that a person would have to do teshuva for. That's not the way a person should make a living. So how does she do teshuva for the life that she led, the things that she had done? So we first of all believe that everybody could do teshuva, even people that have lived a very immoral life and done wrong things. That's as long as a person's alive, it's never too late. But here, she's risking her life to save these people. And when a person is basically giving up their life for risking, there's like nothing. That's like the ultimate in teshuva, where a person is willing, you know, giving their life to save others. But the same rope which she used to help the adulterers and the immoral people, she's now using it for a mitzvah. And that's what they say. The real way to do teshuva is if a person takes the thing that they sinned with and then they refocus that energy to do something good, that's how you do teshuva. So she had used these ropes to help men who were cheating or whatever, who were sneaking and get around. Now she's using the same rope to help these righteous people come back to the Jewish people and escape. So there is that concept that a person should, if they've, that's one way to do tshuva, is to take what a person has done. Let's say a person has a tendency to get angry with others. So they should get angry with people that are bad, get angry with ISIS, get angry with, use a person, everything that we have can be used for good. Every quality we have. So here she's using her rope trick to save these two people, Kalev and Pinchas. Not only does she save them, she's like a Jewish mother. She's giving them direction, and she's telling them Potomac. She's really interesting. She's telling the soldiers what to do. She tells Pinchas what to do. She's got the deal all figured out. She says he's got to swear. Like, it's really a remarkable kind of thing that just, they just happen to run into this lady, you know, and she's got it all thought out. But that's, you got to admire that. She takes initiative. Yeah.
So did she have the only inn in town, so that's where they had to stay, or?
I don't know.
How did they know to go there?
I don't know.
Hashem guided.
Yeah.
And if she had parents and brothers, why did she have to be whatever she was?
Maybe that's what supported the parents and brothers.
The whole family.
There are a lot of things we don't know.
So much we don't know.
Sometimes it makes it interesting because we can, have different theories about it, and then sometimes we just wish we knew. It would give a better view.
When the Shia comes, we'll know all these answers.
Probably, yeah. There's an expression in the Gemara that oftentimes in the Gemara there's arguments and one person feels they're right and the other right. And the expression of the Gemara is, okay, when Elijah comes, he'll figure it out. You know, in other words, we can have differences of opinion, and when the Mashiach comes, it's called teku, by the way. Teku stands for, the Gemara uses that word teku, if you've ever heard that.
Last night we heard it.
Oh, did you? Really? Okay.
Rabbi Pansky was talking about it last
night. Oh, okay. Teku stands for Tishbi. Eliyahu was from Tishbi. The man from Tishbi, Yitaris, all our questions and wonders. So we'll find out lots of things then. But he's going to have a long list of questions for him when he comes in. So at any rate, she's not done. She says, not only does she let them go, she tells them where to go. She says, go to the mountains. Pen Yifka, initially people would run home, but she said, don't do that, because then you're going to run into the soldiers. So what you should do is hide for 3 days, then they're going to give up, I'd show a robe, and then you could go back on your way. She had it all figured out, gives them all instructions. And verse 70, Yomer Lehem Anashim Nikiyim Anachtim Eshua Secha Zeh Eshua Sani. And they said to her the following. Now they have a dilemma here, which is they want to help this lady and her family. But in a time of war, it's very difficult to find one family. You know, a time of war, things happen. War is very difficult to control. It's a very difficult scene. So they had just sworn by their lives that they were going to save this lady. So now they wanted to give her a sign so that they would be able to help her. And they say the following. 18. Hine anakti boim barat says tikva skuda. Here, take this red string. Has that tikshri b'chan, tie it in the window, the same string that we lowered ourselves down, and bring vesavicha vesimecha. How are we going to save your father and mother amongst all those people? Bring them all into your house, and your brother veskolzvetas. Bring everybody into this house, and keep that rope here. And then this way, we'll give instructions to the troops. You see the house with the red rope? That's the one to spare. And if somebody's out of the house at that time, don't blame us. Dama brosho, their blood will be on their head. When you make a promise, you have to sometimes make it in a way that you'll be able to keep it. And that's what they were saying. And if anybody is harmed, we take full responsibility. We're pledging our lives. And if you tell other people about this discussion, if you make it public that we're going to spare you, so then every house is going to have a red ribbon on it. You know, what are you going to do? So you can't tell anybody. This is going to be our little secret. So 21, that's the deal. V'toma ki divreichem kein hu. She tells them, like the Hebrew here, ki divreichem, like your words, kein hu. That's the way it's going to be. You set your condition, that's exactly what it will be. V'tishalchem, and she says, go. She sends them away. V'yelcha v'tikshur es tikvas v'shini, and she ties it into the wind. Now, she's also very smart. If she'd wait for the war to tie it in the window, they might accuse her of, you know, sending it. She ties it now in the window. She's got a ribbon on her house in the window. You know, that's... verse 22. Vayelcho, and they went. Vayavohar, they went to the mountain, just like she said. Vayashasham, they hid there for 3 days. Ad Shoba, Rotfim, until all the soldiers that were chasing after them had gone back. Vayavakshu, Rotfim, Bekol Aderech. Now, meanwhile, the soldiers had searched everywhere. Volomatsu, and they didn't find them. Verse 23. Vayashubu, Shnei Noshim, and the two men came back. The coast was clear. They came down the mountain of Yavru, and they crossed the Jordan, Yoshua ben Nun. And they came to Yeshua, and they gave him the whole report. They told him what they heard, that the residents are afraid, and that they don't have confidence, and that they all heard about the miracles of Hashem, and they realized that Hashem was with the Jewish people, and they were not going to stand up to them. They realized that this was a sign from Hashem. Verse 24, he said, this is a sign that Hashem is going to give to us in our hand, as kol ha'aretz, the entire land. Not only will he give it to us, but the fight won't be that hard. The people will melt away, so to speak. They'll just, you know, when you begin the fight, they'll just melt away mipenenu, and from in front of us. And so it was a successful mission in that way, in that they learned what was going to happen there. And again, besides that, things happen, like we said, that you wouldn't expect, or you never know. This great person, Rachav, was discovered. And even though, according to one view, she didn't lead such a moral life beforehand, at the right time, she was the one that was willing to risk her life to do the right things. And she turned, you know, she believed in Hashem, and therefore she saved these two great men, and also helped tell the Jewish people that we could go with confidence, that we would know that this idea of having emunah is a very important type of thing. We don't. People often feel that our generation, we don't talk enough about faith, you know, about the value of being confident and, you know, feeling that, you know, Hashem is with us, we're in a life where people worry and they tell you, you know, on the news, you gotta have, you ever hear this, they want you to buy food that lasts for 25 years?
Yeah.
They want it, is it kosher? Why are they worried about food for 25 years? You know, like, you know, there's like no sense of faith or that Hashem is guiding us and we're doing the right, you know, it's a business, that's what it is, right? So but there's the idea that we have faith in Hashem and things will work out, you know, we do what we, you know, we try to do the right things and then Hashem will take care of us, for it's Hashem.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.